Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And as most of you probably realize, Jim was out on Friday. Jim, nothing happened. No big news. nothing broke.
Yeah, you know, it used to be when I took the kids to the pediatrician, that was when the dramatic thing. You know, the interesting thing is, like, we have it's the kind of week where Boehner announces he's resigning on Friday, and we kind of forget that. Remember Monday, Scott Walker was a presidential candidate?
Yes.
Doesn't it feel like a lot happened anyway? So
yeah, that seems like a long time ago. But speaking of the presidential race, that's where our good martini is, and it's actually on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton doing more interviews now, trying to separate herself from the email investigation that the FBI and the Justice Department are now involved in. She was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd, and she said that she actually had nothing to do with deciding which emails went to the State Department, considered to be work emails. She then also had this to say about why the emails that were deemed personal were deleted.
So when that process finished, you know, my attorney said, well, what do you want us to do with all these personal emails? I said, well, I don't need to keep them. I don't need them or want them. So they then talked to the IT server, the technical people who were responsible for maintaining them, and said, you know, we don't need them anymore. That's the limit of my knowledge. I'm not a technical expert. I just said I don't need them. Whatever happened to them, happened to them.
Good luck with that answer. Jim, Martin O'Malley is allegedly still running for president. He was on CNN with Jake Tapper and had this to say about how the Hillary answers to this story allow virtually no oxygen for other stories on the Democratic side.
We need to talk about the ideas that face our country. And what I've said is that talking about emails is not the same as having a debate about the issues that people care most about.
So, Jim, she keeps doing a horrible job of explaining this, and it's sucking all the oxygen out of the Democratic race, which is great.
Yeah, my first observation, Greg, is, hey, IT guy, look out for that bus. oh, no, he got thrown under that bus. He, you know, we saw it coming, but, and it's amazing how Hillary was just standing there. And for O'Malley, on the one hand, yes, this is Martin O'Malley, the guy who has complained loudest about having only six debates on the Democratic side. Desperate for attention, desperate for oxygen in the media environment. But you almost have to sympathize with him. And I kind of feel like he's making a valid point here, that when you talk about Hillary's campaign right now, you talk about the email issue because it's a large, glaring issue that each time she's asked about it, she says something that isn't really true. Right. There were even in that answer you just played, there was all personal emails, except we're finding official information in the personal emails. And when and part of this reflects the fact that when Hillary was running state, she was still not officially with the Clinton Foundation, but her name was still on the organization. Right. It's not like she was completely separated from it. Huma was still plugged in with private entities, still had somehow gotten a special permission slip to work for both private consulting companies and the State Department at the same time. No one's ever explained what the justification for that was. So the idea of where the personal and professional line is with the Clintons always seems very fuzzy. You know, they always are just happening to get really generous speaking fees from friends of theirs, you know, foreign and domestic. So this inextricable blur, this blob that connects their personal and their private stuff, it's kind of very much at the heart of this, that their inability to distinguish what is in the national interest, i.e. keeping all documents for FOIA requests and congressional requests and for the study of history and things like that, and what's in their personal interest, which is don't let anybody have access to that because it might prove embarrassing down the road. As a result of that, she was willing to put it on a private server, which was more vulnerable to hacking and to foreign intelligence and things like that. O'Malley's got a point here. I don't think it's going to change anything, but it is kind of refreshing to see one Democrat pointing out saying, hey, wait a minute, as long as this is going on, we can't talk about anything else. It's kind of a whine in that tone, but it's also an acknowledgement of just the importance of this.
On to the bad martini now, and this goes over to the Republican side of the debate for 2016, and literally related to the third debate, which is scheduled for October 28th. It's going to be in Colorado, and it's going to be hosted by CNBC. But there's some problems with it, because we don't know much else other than that. This is from Politico. The uncertain terms of the next Republican debate are setting off a wave of anxiety among middle and bottom tier campaigns, with several lashing out at the Republican National Committee for failing to provide clarity on how many candidates will appear on stage. While the RNC does not set the rules, it does have a voice in working with the networks running the debates, The committee has not said how many candidates will be allowed into the primetime debate, nor are there any indications that there will be an undercard event, as there have been in the first two debate showdowns of the primary season. The radio silence extends beyond the entry criteria to other aspects of the debate, such as who the moderators will be and how long the duration will be. And Chuck Todd is quoted, he's not actually going to be involved in the moderating of the debate, but since it's an NBC product, he's setting kind of the ground rules here, and he says there's going to be need to be proof that you're viable. So there may not actually be 10 people on stage. But, Jim, it'd be kind of nice to know who's allowed and who's what it's going to take to get in this thing.
The lament we had that ended up arguably driving Rick Perry out of the race, and some might argue Walker, although I think Walker had other issues going on, is let's say we could pick Bobby Jindal, who's my favorite, or we could pick Pataki, or we could pick any one of the candidates who's at, you know, 3%, 2%, 1%. If you're way back and you don't get to be on the big stage with all the other, you know, front-running candidates, how do you ever get to be up there? The only person who's made the jump is Carly Fiorina, and that came because they expanded it from 10 candidates to 11 candidates. Now, after the last debate, everyone had said, well, wait a second. If we have 16 candidates who qualify, and at this point we're now down to 15, I assume Jim Gilmore has not jumped up any, has not hit 1% in any of the polls so far. Then you've got 15 candidates. Why not do two debates, one of eight, one of seven? And at least that way you get two sizable ones instead of the unmanageable 11-4 split that we had last time. Well, apparently that doesn't seem to work. We don't really know what CNBC's criteria is going to be. And already folks who are in that back half of the field are hearing rumors that they want to get rid of them, that they want to, you know, only do the top, let's say, eight candidates or so. It just strikes me as very early to start rubbing people out before they get a chance to really make their pitch on the big stage. It is end of September. Next debate's going to be sometime in October. Again, why is there this rush to knock these people off the stage? Granted, I am among those who are like, I can't believe we have to have long stretches of listening to George Pataki, right? there are times I feel like some of these guys aren't serious. But if we end up striking, you know, Jindal, or for that matter, Christie or Kasich is down in the, you know, single digits. Rand Paul isn't doing particularly well. Most of these guys are at 4 or 5% in polls that have 4 or 5% margins of error. So the difference between the bottom of the top tier and the top of the bottom tier is really, really small and might very much be in dispute here. So I would just like to see CNBC clarify what the rules are and for the RNC to say, look, we're not kicking anybody out yet. Because, you know, it just seems ludicrously premature for the RNC of all committees or all forces to be the one kicking people out for not getting enough support already.
Jim, I think you should be a little bit more careful. You might get frozen out of the Pataki administration if you keep using him as the example.
I will live that. The teeming crowd of Pataki supporters is chanting outside my window right now.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Ben Carson was on ABC's This Week. He was obviously in the headlines a lot this past week based on the comments he made on Meet the Press last Sunday in regards to Muslims and being eligible for president and whether they should be elected president and that sort of thing. And there was a lot on that. There was a lot on some other issues, including the Boehner resignation. But the last question was in response to an interview Kanye West did in Vanity Fair magazine, where he said, "When I run for president, I'd prefer not to run against someone. I would be like, I want to work with you. As soon as I heard Ben Carson speak, I tried for 3 weeks to get on the phone with him. I was like, this is the most brilliant guy." And so Kanye West, kind of not exactly the guy you'd expect to be endorsing or at least liking Ben Carson a lot. And here was Carson's response, which I think a lot of people will like.
"Well, I did have an opportunity to talk with him. I was extremely impressed with his business acumen. He knows a lot about business. And, you know, I talked to him about the possibility of maybe himself and some of the other people in the pop culture doing some music that might be uplifting, that might give young women a sense of their value and young men a sense of responsibility. I think it could be a tremendous thing in our society."
A serious answer to a kind of a fun question there, Jim. My only recommendation to Ben Carson is never invite Kanye West to a live broadcast of anything.
Now, some people might say this is Ben Carson being nice, hoping for a donation. But you know what I'd say to that, Greg?
What?
I ain't saying he's a gold digger. For both of our listeners familiar with Kanye West music, That's a reference to one of his first hits. It'd be interesting if Carson agrees with Kanye's assessment of the Bush administration and Hurricane Katrina. But that's ancient history. We shouldn't bring up such things. I would really love to see a lovely sit-down dinner between Dr. Carson and his lovely wife and Kanye and his quiet, classy wife, who Miss Kardashian, yes. Anyway, I think Carson handled that. Like, on the one hand, it's kind of flattering. It's kind of nice. It might say something that Ben Carson managed to break through and get Kanye West, of all people, to be impressed and be inspired and to, you know, say nice things about him. If Ben Carson makes a cameo in the next Kanye West video, you could only imagine how good. And look, and I agree with Ben Carson's, you know, kind of advice for the music for Kanye West. And I don't dispute, I think probably the way, you know, Kanye West is making a lot of money, both through his music and his fashion line and all the other forms of merchandising he's done. So an unusual partnership, maybe something will come with it. I do understand that Kim Kardashian did endorse Hillary Clinton. Okay. So I think you could see some interesting tension in the West Kardashian household. The good news is that Kanye does have the support of his, I was going to say his father-in-law, but I don't know if that's... the right term anymore. Second mother-in-law? I don't, whatever. His parent-in-law, Caitlyn Jenner, also presumably backing some Republican. So,
oh, man.
It's a modern family, Greg. There you go.
It certainly is. I was going to say, this is the best and most unlikely matchup since Kid Rock endorsed Mitt Romney 4 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, you know, that just came back to Kid Rock being impressed with Mitt Romney's full back tattoo. It's got these big eagle wings and good manners tattooed on there. So.
Oh, man. Good start to the week, Jim. Welcome back. Talk to you tomorrow.
Always good when I can start you with a laugh, Greg. Take care.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.